Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And none of this would work without you. Everything we do, everything we say, every approach we take is with you in mind. Our audience, you consumers, we are all consumers. But the question is, are we educated consumers? Are we financially fit? Are you financially fit? Our purpose is to give you answers to questions that affect your home, your family, and your finances in language that you can understand. You know, we're not doing the economist speak here. We're talking about, what about bread on my table? How am I going to be affected by what I hear? Is it a great time to get a job out there? What do I do with Junior, who's graduated from college and is over there on the sofa because he can't get a job? All of those kinds of things that come up that affect us directly is what Home and Family Finance is all about. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure, as always, to be with you. And I have a dandy of a program today because we have been bombarded over the last few weeks with what's happening in Greece. Should you care? Will it affect the bread that you put on your table? What's the likelihood? All of that stuff comes to mind, and I have no answers, but my guest, Jessica Minton, does. She's a business reporter with the International Business Times. She's looking after this. She studied as her assignment, and I've convinced her to join us. She's come to the program to talk with you, so I'll tell you what you should be thinking about, and we appreciate that. And then following Jessica, we'll be entertained by Ernesto Suarez. Let me ask you this question. How many times have you or your hubby or your wife gone to the gone out of town and you get to the desk to rent a car and they hand you the form and they say, do you want insurance? And you look up and you say, how much is it? And they give you some ridiculous figure and you say, no, I think my auto insurance will cover that, my home insurance. Does it? And suppose it doesn't, are you in trouble? Well, you know, we're going to talk about that. Ernesto Suarez is founder of InsureMyRentalCar.com. Now, make no mistake, he'd like for you to buy insurance from him, but what he does bring to the table for you is also a great deal, a wealth of insurance information that I think will help you make a wise decision. But right now, I turn my attention to Jessica Minton. Jessica, is this a good – first of all, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Thanks for having me on the program, Paul.
Well, we're delighted to have you because I want to ask you this one question. Are you ready?
Yes.
Is this a good time for me to visit the vacation in Greece?
That's a great question. And it could be a yes and it could be a no. And I'll explain both. With the euro being cheaper as it is, so if Americans wanted to go to Europe overall this summer to travel, that would be a great thing. Now, as far as Greece is concerned, it could be really cheap for you to go, but the problem is, even though if you are a tourist and an American and you're going there to get money out, because they have these different capital controls going on where if you're a Greek citizen, you can only take out about 60 euros a day, that's not exactly a lot. So it kind of brings into the question, you know, do you want to be the American with all the euros on you while everyone else doesn't have any money? You know, do you then become a target?
Oh, my goodness, do you become a target? And do the Greeks blame the Americans for what's going on in their country?
No, I've actually spoken to Greek citizens, my sources that are on the ground there, and they're actually really sad right now because a lot of the places have lost bookings, like at hotels, things like that, because people don't want to travel there right now because of what all has been going on in the news. And tourism is such a big part of Greece's overall economy, and they're struggling so much. That's what they need right now. And so they're sad to see that a lot of people aren't going to be traveling there this summer.
It's a fluid situation, and you know, we recognize that. I mean, look how much of the change has occurred. But let's talk about, in a very general sense, explain to my audience what is happening here. I mean, how did Greece get into this situation? What's going on there, Jessica?
So this has been going on with Greece since the financial crisis. They've been having – this is the third bailout program that they have applied for this month since 2010, and basically what has happened, in order for them to get these money from their creditors in Europe, they have to have certain austerity measures. And that basically means, you know, there's certain pension cuts that they have to have and there's tax hikes. But they're blaming some of those measures for hurting their economy because they've been in a depression for so long now, for about 5-6 years. And they're saying, hey, you know, you're making us cut here and hike there, but this is what's making us suffer. And so that's why you see them keep going back and forth to the creditors, and they're just, there's never this agreement, and they're basically just trying to work out short-term proposals.
Do they have enough, do they have their GDP, their gross economic, what is it,
GDP, the gross domestic product?
Yeah, is that big enough to bail them out if these austerity programs or procedures are followed?
If they can agree upon them and over time do it, then yes. I think Ireland is a very good example of a country that was bailed out and that went through reforms and austerity measures that have now come out on the other side of it. And their program ended a year and a half ago, and they're actually on track to be the fastest growing economy in the European Union.
Wow.
So that's like an example of, say, here's a country that, you know, did it right and did it well. And even the Ireland's finance minister has said, you know, if you can go through what we did, you can make it out on the other side. The problem is the pension cuts that they refuse to do. And that's what's really, economists will say, that Greece has to reform, because right now, as proportion to their GDP, they spend over 17% on pension.
Wow, and 17%.
It's been a staggering amount, actually.
All right, let me take a break. Come back. We're talking with Jessica Minton, who knows what she's talking about. She'll tell you how we're going to be impacted. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Jessica Minton out of New York. She is a business reporter with the International Business Times. She knows what she writes about and what she's talking about. And we're talking about Greece and the impact it could or could not have on those of us living here in the United States. And we left last, Jessica, you were mentioning that one of the biggest gut-wrenching issues over there is the pension. They're asking them to make some reforms, or at least to tighten up. And it's not something that the Greeks are taking lightly, is it?
No, it's not. And they're one of the largest retirement populations out there, I think the fifth largest. And something that's interesting when it comes to Greece and other southern European economies, Greece has an inverted population pyramid, so that basically means there's more people over 50 than under 50. And the majority of Greeks, they end up retiring around 55, which sounds pretty young when you think about over here in the States, you know. And so the problem with that is Greeks, their youth unemployment rate is so high. It's over 50%. So if the majority of the youth is unemployed, you know, how are they going to be paying for these pensions? And that's why you see this continuing to happen in Greece. It's a never-ending story with them.
Well, juxtapose that against Ireland, for instance. We talked about Ireland was successful, but their population numbers and the demographics are not the same. You're saying that if they apply but the same measures, that you do think that they could come out of this in a positive vein.
Right. And that's more of a fiscal type thing. They would really have to reform some of those pension measures. That's what economists are saying, in order to get on top of it. And if they don't, there's not a firm road down later on for them. This is something that they have to get straight there. And it's interesting, too, because it's almost as if the economies in Europe, say, Germany, it's like the stronger are getting stronger, but then the weaker are getting weaker. Mm-hmm. So it's not even just Greece. You have those other highly indebted southern European economies like Spain and Italy, too. Now, they are a lot healthier than they were 5 years ago, but they're still quite a dichotomy between those economies and, say, France and Germany.
Right. Well, what happens? Let's assume that this process, at the end of all of this back and forth, the European Union decides that Greece has got to go, that they're no longer going to be part of the Euro process. What does that mean for not only the Greeks, but what does it mean for us?
Now, economists are telling me that the fallout for the rest of Europe and the global economy will probably end up being modest just because Greece is only about 2% of Europe's overall economy. That's a tiny little fraction. And the good news for basically U.S. investors is that even if there's volatility in the global stock markets, it actually would have little impact as far as our 401ks are concerned, because Americans actually have little directly invested in Greece. It's just about $3.7 billion right now as far as stocks and bonds go through U.S. mutual exchange traded funds.
So they've been backing out for the last 5 years, realizing.
Right, exactly. Okay. So they've had time now, because this has been such a saga back and forth for a while. It's more the other part to that, though, what could create problems is, even though it's a tiny fraction, if it somehow creates political contagion where, say, these other countries we were talking about before, Italy and Spain, that also are highly indebted and that are going through similar austerity programs, if they say see Greece end up leaving, and then they want to leave as well, they could say, well, you know what, maybe we're out of here too, and then that creates a lot of uncertainty, and then people will question the euro just in general. It'll lose its credibility, and that's where people have the fear factor with, because it's almost as if you're opening this sort of Pandora's box. And we all saw how very interconnected the global banking system was during the financial crisis just, you know, 6-7 years ago, and I think that's the biggest fear of, if they do leave, what's going to happen later on down the road? Is that just one tiny domino that's going to be the first one to fall?
And if that, if it was just Greece, which you're simply saying, if it was just Greece, maybe no big deal. But if it is Greece, it could be a lot worse than
because,
that.
Because, so Greece, you know, only 2%. But when you look at, say, Italy and Spain, that's the third and the fourth largest economies in Europe, a way, way bigger chunk than what Greece is. So that's where it is kind of looking ahead. What if they leave? And Spain also has a newly elected leftist government, similar to Greece's newly elected government. They have elections later on in November. And so that's why there's that fear. Is Spain going to want to leave now too?
My guest, Jessica Minton, business reporter, International Business Times. We're talking about Greece and how it can impact you. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. You're listening to Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsor, the Defense Credit Union Council, and CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. And we thank them both for their continued support of this program dedicated to making all of you smarter consumers. That includes me as well. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of military saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops worldwide. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can simply learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And as I always say, you don't have to be in the military to be smart enough to save, do you? Which is what a lot of folks in Greece wish that they had done or have done and now can't get to their money. Because, as Jessica mentioned, my guest will tell you, they've locked down in Greece how much money. Imagine that. How much money you can take from your own account. And that's going on right now. Jessica is a business reporter for International Business Times and has joined us to talk a little bit. She's their expert on what's going on in Greece, and she's joining us to tell us how we should be or could be impacted. What should we do over here? As my engineer suggested, that maybe he should sell his house. I don't think you have to do that, Peter. But you ought to take a close look at maybe the 401k. Jessica, what should we do on the side?
Absolutely. So, like we were talking about before, Greece is such a tiny part of Europe, but you never know as far as, you know, people fearing, is there going to be another global meltdown like in 2008 and 2009? And something that possibly coupled with what's going on in Greece and Europe, you're also seeing a lot of volatility in the financial markets in China. And then Puerto Rico is another example of something, you know, kind of tiny, but they're having a lot of debt problems. And these are three issues that have ballooned just since the middle of June. And looking at 401ks, typically when there's sort of a risky environment, people tend to buy U.S. treasuries because that's sort of like this safe haven. And so when that happens, that sort of when the yields fall on that, that actually helps more interest rate sensitive sectors like the utility sector, like say GE and Honeywell, those are utility type stocks, or telecom stocks. So if you have those type of sectors in your 401k, that's probably a good thing. But usually in more volatile environments, we see a lot of swings when it comes to technology, like big technology names, because a lot of technology companies like, say, Intel, Qualcomm, Apple, the majority of their sales are from overseas. So whenever there's an environment like this, you'll see the U.S. dollar gain strength, which sounds really good, right? Because you would think, oh, that gives us more purchasing power. But a strong dollar hurts international companies that do so much of their sales overseas, because once they convert it back, they're basically losing money. And so if you have, you know, more technology maybe in your portfolio, you would see sort of huge swings most likely there, and we have been seeing in the last couple of weeks.
So is it
that's something to keep out for.
Okay, and am I being too pessimistic to suggest that the Puerto Ricos, the Greece, the situation in China is maybe foretelling that we're going to have a bust in the economy? I mean, is that over the top?
I actually don't necessarily think so, based on a lot of the analysts that I've spoken with recently. Okay. Now, I don't think there's going to be some sort of massive global downturn in the next couple of months. But it's interesting because, say, in the U.S., with the U.S. Federal Reserve, they've been talking about raising interest rates for years, right? But they haven't done it yet. But it seems as if they're inching closer to do that. Now, basically how that would impact the consumer is interest rates, if they're beginning to rise, that means if you wanted to refinance your mortgage, you would want to do it now before they begin to raise rates. And then if you look at credit cards, the 0% financing on those will probably end up going away once the Fed does inch closer to raising rates. Now, the question is, you know, would they still do that with all of these events in China, Greece, and Puerto Rico going on? And investors and analysts are being a little bit more doubtful that that's going to happen now, just because if you look at the financial markets, if they start to tighten, like in China, that's concerning. And if you look at the economic data in the U.S., the most recent jobs report, it wasn't a blockbuster report, but it wasn't as strong as what people were looking at. And so those are also kind of concerning factors when you look at the U.S. and what's going on here.
Okay.
So, you know, there might not be necessarily one right answer, but there is a lot of things going on globally that
people
should probably keep their eyes on.
Pay attention. Jessica Mendon, what a pleasure. Come back and see us again soon, would you please?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I'd delight to have you on the program. Jessica Mendon with the International Business Times, talking about what's going on in Greece. We'll be right back, because we're going to talk to you about insurance, auto insurance, rental car insurance, what you don't know. That's next.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
We're back and pleased to be with you. Thanks for sticking with us. So here you are. It's a wonderful time of the year. It's summertime and everybody plans a vacation here or there. And you're now, you've flown to some city in the U.S. or maybe to Europe, who knows. And you get off the airplane or however you got there, and you walk up to the rental car agency to get rent a car. And by the way, this happens to all of us, folks. And the lady there says, or the gentleman clerk says, what about auto insurance? Do you want insurance? And you stop. And you, how much is it, you might say? And they give you some number that just knocks you over because it's half of what you're paying for the car. But can you do it? And then you say, oh, no, Mike, auto insurance, or it's either true or you tell the lie that your auto insurance will take care of it. And then you leave there and they remind you that if anything happens, you're responsible. And then for your entire 2 weeks that you're driving a car, you're wondering whether or not you're really covered or not. That happened to you? Well, let me tell you something. A recent survey shows that over a quarter, 25% of U.S. drivers who rent a car have driven without fully understanding what insurance they had and what they were covered for. Yep, 25%, quarter of us. That's not something that's a surprise to Ernie Suarez. He's founder and CEO of, quote, InsureMyRentalCar.com. He has, for more than 20 years, had experience working in insurance. He's identified a gap, as he calls it, in the U.S. market for car rental insurance products, which would be cheaper than the cover offered at the rental desk. And most places I've found, it's pretty doggone expensive. So here we are. What do you do? Why even spend a moment thinking about insurance? And Ernie says you can avoid that by being insured before you go. But will my car rental company allow that? All of those are questions that we now ask my next guest, Ernie Suarez, who joins us from London. Ernie, nice to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Did I sum this up properly?
Yes, of course.
Of course.
You did a great job.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ernie. I'm passionate about this, and when I saw this was because I face that every time. And I then say to the agent, no, my auto insurance will cover it. Will it?
Most of the times, you might be right. But also, I'd say a large percentage of the times, you might be wrong. And I think you quoted something like 25% of people that show up to the rental car desk might not be aware what they're actually buying or what they're being offered. There's a lot of confusion around the topic. So what we've done at InsureMyRentalCar.com is build a product that kind of takes you through that jargon and clearly presents to you a money value proposition much cheaper than the rental cars companies offering you at the rental desk. And we know for a fact that, you know, there are tons of people out there, tons of customers of car rental companies that are sold this product without a real understanding of whether they're covered or not. And you can start the confusion by people thinking they have the cover either on their car insurance policy,
right,
or through a credit card.
Right.
Or I guess maybe even thinking that they don't need the cover, also I'll take the chance.
And that's,
but in theory.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's exactly the point. I'm a victim or I am that person. I don't know. Ernie, I don't know whether I should get that insurance. In the back of my mind, it's saying you could be ruined for life if you wreck this car. But, you know, do we really need insurance when driving a rental car?
If you're hiring a car, if you're renting a car in the United States or anywhere in the world, it's not mandatory, it's not statutory to have a collision damage insurance. So what the automobile rental car companies are doing is they're presenting this to you as an ancillary product that you must take, to replace that fear factor, to give you that peace of mind. The problem is you're paying such a high price for the product. When you show up to the rental desk, you know, you can just imagine the scene, right? You're cranky from a long flight. You have screaming kids in the back. You've probably got a long line behind you at the rental desk. The worst thing you need to know is to be pressure sold or put into a position where you have to make probably an expensive financial decision and not really understand what you're buying.
Yeah, yeah.
The interesting thing is that I think up to 40% of the people we surveyed are, you know, they didn't know that they could be potentially liable for the full cost of the car. That's the real I guess that's the truth is that people really don't know what the payout,
right,
or the potential exposure they have at the rental desk if they decline the insurance, or if they're not really sure what cover they have with their credit card or with the car insurance policy they have. And some people, like, you know, let's say I'm a New Yorker where maybe I don't own a car and I depend on public transportation. When you go out and rent a car, you know, you don't have car insurance at all, so you might not be aware of the terms as well that they're using. Mm-hmm. At the rental desk.
And the point is that
big confusion.
And forgive me, but the point is that I don't have to. In other words, the rental car company can't make me buy their insurance, whether I have insurance or not, right?
Yeah, they can't make you take it. It's always an option.
Okay.
You know, there's obviously the car, the insurance that protects the damage to the car, and then there's the insurance for third-party liability. You have statutory, minimum statutory third-party liability when you hire a car. Obviously, they sell you their own additional liability insurance to top up that state minimum level. And in some states, it's very low. It could be like as low as $25,000. So you need to be aware that there are two types of insurance being sold to you. And this is some of the jargon that we tried to clarify on our website.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when we come back, we're going to talk about those two types of insurance so that you understand it, folks. You don't understand this. And you need to understand it because it's expensive. When I come back, I'll ask Ernie to explain how much it can cost me per week for their insurance. And then I'll find out what he's offering that might be a lot less expensive and a lot less confusing. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and my guest, Ernie Suarez from Rent-A-Car. Hey, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Ernie Suarez. He is the founder of InsureMyRentalCar.com. We know, and based on his studies, that a lot of you, me, you, and others, come to the rental desk. We have no idea whether we really are adequately insured or not. We do know that we're going to be offered the insurance. We'll feel like sometimes that we have to take it, but it really is an option. But let's talk now, Ernie, from the U.S. perspective. What would it cost? What is the insurance? What's the average cost of insurance if I opt to buy the insurance that is offered to me?
Okay, if you show up to the rental desk and you're renting a car for a week, you would be paying about $175. For collision damage waiver or loss damage waiver. They're both confused anyway, but that's probably $157 more than a standalone policy from a company like us on the website.
Wow.
InsureMyRentalCar.com.
So if I had come to you beforehand and said I want some insurance from a company like yours, when I got to the desk there and they said, do you want insurance? I say, no, I'm going to save $150 every week that I have the car.
That's right. That's right.
Why don't people do that? Is it because we don't know? We're not prepared? What's the story here, Ernie?
I think most people are unaware of the alternative. Most people are unaware we exist. Most people think that when you show up to the rental car, that you're captive to what they're selling you and that the only place you can buy insurance is from the rental desk. And that's not correct. There are many types of businesses today. We're not the only ones, but I can tell you that there are plenty of ways you can get insurance to cover your rental car. So, you know, the idea it needs to sink in to people to say, look, I have an option before I travel, when I get to the airport, you know, I can buy a standalone policy and it can actually be better than if I think I'm covered by my car insurance policy. Or most people default to the answer, I have a credit card, and I think it covers that.
Yeah.
I think people need to be very careful in that because they really need to know the gaps in these options. So, for example, when you use your – if you're relying on your car insurance policy to cover you while you're driving a rental car, you need to be aware that – some of these policies, these car insurance policies, will protect you after, or like, you know, they will apply the deductible that's on your car rental insurance policy, the car insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here that you're covered, it really isn't, because in the end, if you claim against your car insurance policy, you're going to get hit with a no claims bonus, your discount's going to go down, and your premiums are going to go up. So by using your car insurance policy, you're in fact not really saving any more money.
Well, take me through this. Here's the deal. Yeah. Ernie, look, I get to the car company, to the rental car desk, right? I don't even know what kind of car I'm going to get yet, or maybe I do. Maybe I've just reserved the car. How do I get you or your companies or companies like yours involved in that without it being a hassle at the desk? Do I buy this beforehand? You don't know what kind of car I'm going to get, so are you willing to give me a blanket? I mean, how does this work?
So you can come to our website anytime up to 6 months before you travel.
Okay.
And you're picking up your rental car, and you can purchase a policy from us on the website, and we will issue you documents and your certificate of insurance for the times that you want the insurance for. So you can select the time, the dates that you want the cover for. So you can buy our policy for single use, or you can buy it on an annual basis. That means come and buy our policy and use it as many times as you want during the year, as long as your rental car contract doesn't exceed 31 days or 60
right,
days.
Right.
Options. But you're talking about a product that's quite easy to get that doesn't involve a lot of information from you.
I got it. Okay.
When you take out the policy, there are no restrictions on driver's license. There's
right,
no restrictions on what state you're from. But we do try to guide you through that journey on the webpage. It's very easy to take out a policy.
Okay. Your website, of course, is insuremyrentalcar.com, folks. So if I hear this right, Ernie, what I do is if I'm planning of a trip in August, say the 15th through the, I come to your website and I insure myself for that period of time. Is that right?
That's right. You come to our website anytime before your trip, up to a day before you collect the rental car.
Okay.
And you can basically get your documents within 5 seconds after your credit card's been approved.
Okay.
And you get everything in your email.
Okay. And what do I do with that document? Do I show it to the rental car people when I get there?
Yeah. Some rental car companies, because they want to see proof of insurance, mm-hmm. In a way to scare you to think that you need a document, they will request to see a document. But in theory, all you really have to say is, no thanks.
That's it.
They provide you the minimum statutory liability. Therefore, you're covered on that respect. On the damage to the car, well, that's up to you. That's your risk. It's not statutory to take any insurance policy. Therefore, they're going to rely on you to tell them the truth most of the time. Therefore, they're not going to really inspect. Those that really want to probably be diligent or kind of instill fear about whether you want insurance or not,
right,
they're going to want to request a document. But at that point, you can just share with them what you've purchased from our website. And, there's no real reason for them to say, oh, okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
that's the cover I was looking for.
So let's look at the numbers that you talked. You said it would cost me $175 a week for rental. How much would that same week cost me if I came to you and rented a car per your rules? How much would I pay?
Depending on what state you reside, that could be from as low as $1,750 a trip up to 31 days.
Wow.
So you could be paying, obviously saving a great deal of money, which is up to $150 savings on a week's rental. So you could use that probably for a meal with your family, or you could use it on a golf course. It all depends how you want to apply that opportunity cost. But
so the difference, let me be clear, the difference between what they're going to charge $175 for a week and what you charge for the week could be as much as $150.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Right. We're basically shifting the...
Ernie, let me stop you. Let me stop you a moment. Let me take a pick, because I got a couple other questions when we come back. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. My guest, Ernie Suarez, from a company that you might want to know about, InsureMyRentalCar.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Listening to Home and Family Finance, I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. We're talking with Ernie Suarez, who is the founder of InsureMyRentalCar.com. He comes to us from London. His company is worldwide, and their purpose is to provide you an option when you get to that rental car desk and the guy says, do you want insurance? And you can say to him or them, I already have insurance. Here's my documents. And you're going to save up to $150 if you're getting the full coverage on the car. But the real question here, Ernie, is whether I even need you if my insurance policy is truly full coverage. Do I need to come and see you or go through this? Let's say I've got, I've got full the top, not the minimum, but the maximum. Do I need you or is this a step I can bypass altogether?
No, I think you still need to come and look at our website and look at what's on offer, because when you have whatever coverage you have on a car insurance policy, you're going to be protected potentially for driving in other cars, particularly a rental car vehicle.
Yes.
But you have to keep in mind they're only going to cover you up to the value that your car is. So you could establish that there is going to be a gap if you hire a more expensive rental car.
I see. Okay.
And the car insurance policy that you have might only have a limit up to a certain amount. So you could eventually end up with a gap in the payback scenario of a stolen car or a car with a total loss.
All right.
That's one aspect of
it.
Another aspect is, depending on where you travel, the rental coverage is only really provided to you if you rent a car in the United States, or territories that are.
I get it. So if I'm traveling overseas, my policy might not work at all overseas.
That's right. Your car insurance policy might not work. Therefore, you need to come to us.
Okay.
If you're going overseas.
Okay.
Those are just a couple, but if you don't want an impact on your no claims bonus, that's another reason to think about why to use us separately to a car insurance policy with all the extras, et cetera.
Yeah. What are the most common areas of confusion when it comes to car rental? Have we covered that? Is that what we're talking about? This is what people are most confused about, right?
Yes, the area of car rental insurance, you mean the all aspects of what you get offered at the rental desk,
yeah,
is the most confusing part, because there's different terminology. The same companies use different terminology within even the some of the branches, and then you get if you're going across companies to try to make a comparison, you can't even do that, because most of them are saying collision damage waiver, others are saying loss damage waiver. Others are saying that collision damage waiver covers loss of use, and then the loss damage waiver says it's covering everything but the loss. So there's inconsistency the product definition level. So how can a customer actually be informed?
I get you.
At that last minute. So it's
okay.
This is what we want to.
You make the case very well. You make the case very well, especially for those of us who come up with those questions, and you do make the case. And if you're interested, folks, you can certainly go. It doesn't cost you anything to go to insuremyrentalcar.com, take a look around the site, see what you find out, see if it's going to be more comfortable for you. And he's already said it's easy. You come there, you say, I'm going to go this week period of time, you buy insurance for that, you're covered, and you don't have to worry about it. I'm going to do that because it just makes sense to me. It makes perfect sense. But let's talk about other things. Do I bring along my own GPS or my own car seats? Is that a good savings for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Nowadays, the car rental companies are trying to basically make double or triple the amount of money that you are going to pay from the original booking reservation. So what they're trying to do is upsell you all these ancillary services and products to hopefully get you on the road with paying much more than what you started with. So, if you hire a GPS, expect to pay about $70 to $90 extra for the rental. If you use your own car seats, you that's a great saving, because the car rental company will charge you anywhere from $60 to $90 a week.
Wow.
And, and if you add the insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you add, we've discussed that before, but saving is, for a week's rental, could be up to $150 in some states. So overall, you can see the real benefit of just knowing a couple of the little bits that we're trying to get customers to be aware of.
Ernie,
you can save a bundle on your car rental.
You sure can, and that's why I had you on the show, because I believe it too. Ernesto Suarez, founder and CEO of InsureMyRentalCar.com. Thanks for joining us. Come back again and talk to us soon, will you please?
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. A pleasure to have you with us. And it's a pleasure to have you too, folks out there, wherever you are. I hope we've helped you. A little bit of education can go a long way, especially when it comes to the money in your pocket. So save that money, keep it there, and put it in a savings account. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back here at the same time, same place, here on Radio America. I look forward to seeing you. I'll be here. Will you? Have a good day.